Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
We're thrilled to have you here, Jordi. Welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. I guess, could you please introduce yourself to our audience and share what you're best known for?
Of course. So my name is Jordi Tak. Doesn't really sound like a very British name, and you're correct in saying that. I'm actually Dutch. I'm from the Netherlands. I've been living in London now for the past 7 years. I guess what I'm best known for is being a digital platform expert with a strong hospitality background. I have a degree in hospitality management and business administration. And I've in the past, I've worked in high-end restaurants and hotels, really ranging from like Michelin star restaurants to your Hyatts. So that's a bit more about my background. I think what's really putting me in a unique position is having this hospitality background mixed with like my tech expertise. I really try to use this to make companies more user-friendly by really seeing the user journey through the user's experience, through their perspective.
Wonderful. Well, touching on that bit about your background in the high-end hospitality space, my first question, kind of what lessons can be learned from the hospitality sector that we can bring into sort of user experience, especially in the tech apps space? Do you find that you're ever referring back to your time in hospitality when thinking about user experience?
So in the hospitality sector, the most important thing is really the experience of the guests, like how they experience your establishment or your service or even the product, if it's like food or something. It really, like whether it's like being served in a restaurant or you're being injected to a hotel, if the guest has a poor experience or they have an amazing experience, they are very inclined to like share this with like family and friends, maybe even on social media. It's just a way that brand recognition is just being spread around, in my opinion. In my past experiences, like companies, their main focus is usually like how to make more money, whether that's by reducing costs or it's by selling more of their product or their service. But they mainly do this by selling their product or service from their perspective. They obviously know their product or service best. They think they know their USP, and that's how they're trying to market it to the people that are buying or like interested in that product. However, if the user doesn't understand what the product or service is meant to do or what the user journey is supposed to be, the result is really just a really poor experience with your digital product. Every time I work on digital products, I really ask myself, like, how will users experience like different designs and different functionalities? And are they even getting the information they're looking for to make a purchasing decision? Like when I refer to my time in like the hospitality sector, I usually look back to like one of the first lessons I learned, which is really around what is it that your guests want and what is it that your guests need, which could really be something really basic, like a bed, for example. Or it could be if they're booking a 5-star hotel, do they really want to have a luxurious spa? The trick to an amazing experience is to truly understand your users or your guests and really going above and beyond and provide what they might not expect or they didn't even know that they wanted at the time. And this is how you create lasting relationships with your customer and brand loyalty to your products.
Turning from outwardly looking at customers to inwardly looking at perhaps different stakeholders within the company, Have you learned any kind of communication do's and don'ts from your time in hospitality that you can bring into things like stakeholder management? So what advice could you share with the Label Sessions audience around building relationships and trust in such a short period of time?
So I think one of the beautiful things about the hospitality industry is that there's such a wide variety of people, and you really have to adapt your communication style depending on the person you're currently interacting with, whether that's like a peer, a fellow employee, or maybe it's like the CEO of the hotel, or it's a guest. This lesson has been so valuable for me, especially in like the tech sector. I've worked with such a wide variety of level of seniority. Like if I'm launching a product, I really have to change my communication style depending on what the audience is. A really great example is if I'm launching a product that's customer facing and I have to provide a brief to our support team, then they're going to need a certain amount of detail, right? Because they'll be engaging with your user base, and those users might have questions or issues with your product. So they need to know the ins and outs of everything. So they need to have a lot of detail. So that brief will most likely contain like a very nice explanation, but also like images and videos they're able to use. However, when I'm updating like senior leadership or C-suite, I tend to focus more on like why we're launching this product, like what kind of issue is it resolving, and also what the results have already been, or what the projected results are. Also, I'll be a lot more concise and to the point in my communication style. So this is just a really great example of like how, if you have a different audience, you really need to adapt that communication style depending on what they need. To answer your second question around building relationships and trust in such a short period of time, I've really found that taking time to getting to know your team, but also your stakeholders, and being sincerely interested in their work, but also their personal life, has been in the past like a really great recipe for me to like build trust and respect. I'm not saying that you need to ask them like very personal questions on an ongoing basis and really like prod into their personal life. But if, for example, they've mentioned, oh, I have a birthday coming up this weekend and it's the week after, it's such a great thing to like remember that. And then going back to them, it's like, oh, how was your birthday? That really makes them feel recognized and listened to. And it's all about remembering the smaller details they share and making sure you follow up on that. That builds really strong relationships, like not just for the product that you're currently working on, but also for future relationships.
Yoda, your main roles have been in sort of product management and overarching digital strategy. When you've worked in big companies such as WeWork, when it was kind of rapidly expanding, I guess my question is like, how much do you go through external reviews and tweak the product or the journey?
That's a really great question. I really treat my product backlog and roadmap as an ever-changing thing. Obviously, there's going to be core initiatives that are sort of like set in stone and that feed directly into the business strategy and objectives. For external reviews, I review them on a regular basis. Especially if you're working on an application, you have such easy access to these reviews because they come directly into your App Store review page. If you want to lean more into a user-focused journey, in my opinion, it's really vital to keep tabs on like the reviews as they come in. And that really, you need to determine then if you want to incorporate that in the roadmap, but there's like multiple factors that you have to keep in mind. So for example, like how many users could this potential solution be impacted? What is the level of impact? Like what's the level of effort to make this a reality? And also like from a cost perspective, like how much is it going to cost you to come up with a solution? But also like how confident are we that the proposed solution is actually going to solve the issue and is going to reach this audience? If all of that together comes up with a really high score, then in my opinion, it's worthwhile to tweak the backlog and the roadmap. But again, it also depends. Like in the past, I've also had that senior leadership was really pushing for something. It's like, hey, we need to have this done ASAP. And that's also going to impact your roadmap. And it's not necessarily something that you have full control over.
With that then, how do you strike a balance between addressing these external sort of criticisms, reviews, but making sure that it isn't constantly changing and like confusing the team, confusing the customers?
So there's always some level of ambiguity in this line of work, in my opinion, whether that's with product management or with project management. I'm sure my fellow product and project managers out there will agree with me. There's always going to be some changes that you haven't foreseen. But there's different ways of dealing with this. If I can help it, if it's within my power, I always try to make sure that it's not directly impacting work that's already been in progress and it's been discussed with the team, but I'll try to schedule it for later. If it does happen, which again, like it can happen, I always try to highlight the why. Like understanding why certain works are being pushed back or moved forward is really key for others to understand what changes are being introduced and why. In addition to this, like if there's a change upcoming, I will make sure to communicate this with the team and also listen to their feedback. With the team, I mean like the technical engineers, because they're obviously most familiar with like the coding and how everything is built. Because they will know like if any additional work is being introduced, how it's going to impact any ongoing works and if there's any other elements that need to be taken into consideration. So to answer your question in short, there's always going to be some work that needs to be introduced midway through, but I always try to limit it to like work that's being in progress.
It's all about communication and transparency, I guess, kind of what you're saying.
Exactly, yes.
With that then, talking from being the gap filler or the translator, how do you go about doing that for the commercial team and also like the back end technical engineers?
Yeah, so I found in my experience that this is all about changing your communication style, understanding the type of person you're working with. When I'm working with a commercial team, for example, they tend to like explain to me what like the top of the iceberg looks like is what I'm going to refer to. It's more like, what do animals need to look like? What is the message they want to convey? But when I talk to technical engineers, I will try to explain the vision of the commercial teams, but we'll really leave it up to the technical engineers to come up with certain solutions. I found that it really gives them some sort of power and creativity around what possible solutions could look like as long as the vision of the commercial team is coming to life, right? So once they provided me with their insights into possibilities, I present these back to the commercial teams. But again, like it's really key to understand like what the core of the initiative is, like what are we trying to achieve? What is the user experience going to be? And if you're able to successfully convey this, you will find that the language between the two types of teams is actually not so different. They might use different words here and there, but as long as the core of the initiative is the same across the both teams, you will launch a successful product.
I guess it's kind of about trust. So that the commercial teams are trusting you to take their vision and translate that. And then you're trusting your technical engineers to also... You're trusting yourself to be able to convey that and then trusting them to get onto the sort of nitty-gritty details part.
100%. I guess obviously falls back into like building relationship with your stakeholders. That's why it's so key to build that level of respect and trust with them.
For the next part, I kind of want to talk about this user experience and user journey on digital platforms. So in your opinion, kind of why isn't the link from user experience and kind of making a sale, i.e. kind of like making revenue, why isn't that talked about more?
I find that people are really comfortable just to stay in their box, especially with like companies. They think they know their brand best, which is obviously the case. Like they're the ones who's invented the product and the service. They've done their market research and they're the ones that created the product. But what I'm seeing is that companies launch a product or even like part of a product and then not review any user feedback, and solely rely on like data that they're getting from the product. And I really feel like that's a missed opportunity. It really takes out the human element of reviews. The link between user experience and making sale isn't talked about that much, in my opinion, is because most people don't have a hospitality background or something similar. Or even when they do, they don't know how to apply it in tech. Again, it's all about the human element, like inserting that back into the product, because we live in such like a technical age, a digital age. It's just missing the human element a little bit, in my opinion. I think where companies realize the importance of placing a higher focus on user journeys and experience, they will see an increase in profits. In the past, I have helped companies improve the user experience by enhancing essential features in their digital products, and that in turn reduced churn and also boost engagement, which then in turn led to increased revenue.
And I guess with that, you've given us a lot of points, but what are you seeing a lot of that kind of we need to stop, but also kind of alternatively, what in your opinion, what should we start thinking about that perhaps we haven't really had a focus on?
That's a really good question. I think what we need to stop doing is just thinking about how to push products and make quick sales. Obviously, that's great, but it doesn't like connect users with your brands and creates like a long-term relationship with them. And we need to start thinking more about what it is that users really need and where there's a gap in the market. And if there's a need, a good product will sell itself.
I kind of, what advice can you give people who are finding that they aren't converting, you know, this digital experience into action points to, you know, getting the sale or getting people to sign up for a membership?
Always have an open line with your users, whether that's through feedback through the App Store, or it could be a focus group, for example, or maybe it's a survey that you send out to your email marketing base. Lead your digital experience by listening to your users. Try not to stay in your box.
Almost linked to everything you've said so far about this user experience, but almost to sum it up, how do you foster that creation of a customer brand bond? So how do you kind of make sure that users feel really, you know, they feel confident about what the product is, you know, what the mission of the company is, and how do you make sure that they really kind of, they feel connected to that?
I'm a firm believer of using data to support any business decision, and I really don't think that this is any different, in my opinion. Showing how past customer-focused initiatives have positively impacted OKRs, for example, should be enough to persuade people to lean more into our customer-focused approach. However, if that still doesn't work, my go-to is really to let them experience the product themselves, and like especially like focusing on the pain points that users have described, and just show them how it's like impacting the overall user experience. And again, if this is the more like senior leadership, like show them how it's impacting KPIs, because that's usually their like language that they speak. Your product should really exude the mission of the company, and it should be clear from the get-go what the company is trying to achieve and why they're doing this. If this is not the case, you need to be wondering like what needs to be changed in this case. My advice would really be like friends or family, or maybe people that you know that are not using your product yet, like let them experience the product and ask them, like, what is the message that you're getting from this? This is really such a great way of, A, having that human interaction in there, but also seeing if the message you're trying to convey, if that's really coming across to people who are, may not be familiar with your brand. So that's probably how I would do it.
We almost kind of want to dig a little bit deeper into kind of where your mindset are. Who are you, Jordi? So we have a few quick fire questions to ask. What is your signature dish to impress friends or family?
Oh, it's really corny, I think. I've taken this recipe from TikTok. It's the baked feta and cherry tomato pasta. But it's such an easy dish to make, and everyone seems to like it. So
And I think that's the best thing about it. Like, you don't want a signature GIF that is so complicated that takes you hours and hours. You're like, it works. It's quick. It's easy.
Exactly.
Next question. Another life. What would your career be?
I think it will probably be something to do with music. So maybe like a musician or something. I also really enjoy dancing, but again, like, I don't really have like the background in it, but I do really enjoy those two things.
I have two more questions for you. So the first one being kind of, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
I think the best piece of advice is that in my early career at WeWork, one of my managers told me, I was upset about something that happened with someone, and he said 95% of the people that do something that's not, that rubs you the wrong way, they don't do it with a bad intention. If something, it's just so important to understand what the other person is trying to do. Like, it's so easy just to fall back on like, oh, they're just trying this to like rub me the wrong way. But they probably have like another goal in mind that you just didn't understand before. And that's really what made me look different into clashes that I've had with people in the past. Is like, why are you acting this way? I know it doesn't have anything to do with me per se, but that's just really helped me like seeing it from like from both parties' views.
Wonderful. Well, I have one more question for you. It's a question we ask everyone here on the podcast. Jordi, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
I mean, it kind of depends like what you're describing as weird, right? But I'll just go off, well, I don't know, maybe like a 7 or 8 if you really get to know me well. I'm pretty much an open book from the get-go, I'd say. But the pet you're defining is weird, I think. It's not like I'm like doing weird stuff in public.
Well, thank you so, so much for your time and kind of the small snippets of advice that you kind of gave to us here on the podcast. Thank you so, so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.